Talker 106.7 FM here on Saturday morning. It's February 14th in the year 2020. I'm one of your hosts, Yael Osowski, reporting to you from Vienna, Austria, and we have our good man on the line, Mr. David Clement, coming to us from Toronto. David, sir, how goes it?
It is going well. It's going well. Excited for another week and another show.
Yeah, we've got very good comments that we've been getting online, on social media, and all the rest. You can always message us and find us and really try to spread the message on consumerchoiceradio.com. There you have the full program. We've got the full program there that is available every single week. We've also got the podcast that you can subscribe to using your favorite podcast service that you like, whether it be the podcast from Apple or Google Podcasts or Overcast, or maybe you're just an old school RSS fan. So we've got that with all their YouTube videos and show notes from every week that we have going on. So yeah, I think we've got a good number of news and clips and go down. I mean, a lot of things have been happening, David. We were able to get through another week. Obviously, there's a lot of political stuff going on, but at the same time, we've got a lot more that has popped up. David, you know, tell us from your angle, what are a couple of the big headlines or big stories that you saw that fell upon your lap that you knew would be perfect for the program?
Yeah. So a couple big stories. I mean, I feel like we talk about Huawei all the time, but it looks like they've been charged with racketeering. The country of Ecuador is really pushing for the U.S. to lift tariffs on their major import or exports of broccoli, artichoke, tuna, and roses. McClatchy & Co., which is the second largest newspaper group in the country, has gone bankrupt, so that certainly has an impact.
Okay, let's hit upon all those in order real quick.
Sure.
Let's do Huawei, because I think we are likely one of the only radio programs out on the nets, on the broadcast nets, that talks about Huawei this much.
Yeah.
These guys care so much about this Chinese company. There's a lot of stuff to cover here when it comes to Huawei. I have a small clip, David. It'll give you a little intro.
Okay.
We can talk a bit more about what it means.
Great.
The U.S. Justice Department announced Thursday that it's charging Chinese tech giant Huawei with 16 counts. Federal prosecutors claim that the company conspired to steal trade secrets from six U.S. companies. Their indictment also alleges that Huawei installed surveillance equipment in Iran. They say that it was used to monitor, identify, and detain demonstrators during anti-government protests in 2009. The telecommunications company claims that the U.S. is attempting to damage its reputation. The White House placed Huawei on a so-called trade blacklist last year. U.S. officials expressed national security concerns. That included fears that the company might spy on customers on behalf of the Chinese government.
Oh, man. You know what that means, though, right, David?
What does it mean?
It's a strange world out there.
Nice little ice note. We'll get to that. That's Bernie Sanders. We'll get to that later. Yeah, Huawei stuff. This is getting pretty serious. We at the Consumer Choice Center, which produces this program, we've talked about this for a couple of months, probably over a year. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of national security concerns. This is the Chinese Communist Party, the same people who are totally botching the coronavirus. These are the same people who are basically the ones who are overseeing all the actions and operations of Huawei. If you are a member of the board, you're required to be a member of the Communist Party. We don't know the exact relationship between the board of directors and the Communist mm-hmm. Party. We don't know who takes directions or really how it works. But, there are concerns there. And they're getting bigger and bigger. And really, they're trying to be the full force for especially 5G around the world. And I think that's very concerning for any of us who care about our privacy online, who don't want a Black Mirror type totalitarian system in the future. There's just a lot of concerns. The Attorney General of the United States, Bill Barr, he actually gave a few speeches on this topic very recently. I wasn't able to pull clips because there's no good recordings, but it's good to know that this is becoming more and more of a concern, specifically because the Chinese and the Huawei have really, they've got some of the critical pieces and parts and systems needed for a lot of 5G systems in places like Europe and different mm-hmm. European countries. So they're kind of being a force to reckon with. It's insane.
And it's not just economic anymore, and the economic impact of kind of this back and forth. U.S. State Department officials this week announced that if Canada allows Huawei into 5G in Canada, that they won't they'll basically end the classified information sharing agreement that they have with Canadian security agencies. Wow. So you could have some serious breakdowns diplomatically between countries who traditionally share intelligence and things like that. And so it's what was just like, okay, well, we don't know if this company can be trusted with consumer privacy is now kind of spreading into various other aspects of diplomacy and statecraft and the relationships between countries. So it's definitely as much as we often sound like a broken record because we talk about this subject so much, it seems that every week it becomes more pressing and more relevant. So I think we'll probably be talking about this for quite a while.
And there's another story, and it's very related. If any of you are listening and you at any point have gotten a type of credit report from a company like Experian, your data was hacked. This was about a year ago. It was a big deal. You know, this is like millions, hundreds of millions of these credit reports that were hacked. They didn't know exactly how it happened, but basically the information had been leaked, and that includes all of your financial transactions, your social security number, where your bank accounts are, all this kind of stuff. And it turns out that according to a new, I think, indictment, it was actually members of the Chinese military who've been found with hacking the Experian. So this is four members, according to the AP, four members of the Chinese military were charged with breaking into the computer networks of the Equifax and Experian credit reporting agency and stealing the personal data of tens of millions of Americans. So it was like 145 million people in the U.S.
Incredible.
Names, addresses, social security numbers, driver's license numbers, and all other data that were stored there. Bill Barr, who is the Attorney General, said the scale of the theft was staggering. This was huge. This was a big deal. It really led to a new conversation about consumer privacy, about what we want to have in terms of a privacy bill.
Yep.
There are a couple of things I think we should mention here as well is at the same time that this is happening, there are privacy laws that are being talked about and discussed. There's one in New York State that they're currently going over. I haven't read through the details. I had someone who sent it to me, David. And, you know, there's a lot of concern for consumer privacy. I think some propositions are good. Some are probably going way too far and make user experience terrible. Mm-hmm. It's definitely the case in the EU. I mean, just to talk to you now, David, and read articles in the US, I have to use a VPN because of GDPR and because US newspapers don't want to deal with all the regulation and rigmarole that the European data brokers kind of require.
So
this is concerning. I'm also pissed because my dad was in here too. So this is a personal data.
Yeah, that's pretty scary when you think like it's one thing to have your privacy encroached upon, and then it's another to have it encroached upon by a totalitarian regime. Yeah. Somewhere else in the world. That's pretty frightening.
I feel very much stop and frisked.
Yes. Stop and frisk. Yeah. Which is a very, very
it's a good
newsworthy.
To what's happening with our favorite, not really our favorite, we don't really have a favorite, but Michael Bloomberg, former New York City mayor, former Republican, then independent, now Democrat, running for the presidential nomination. He's in a little bit of hot water. It seems as if, as you know, when you're the mayor of a large city, you make a lot of decisions that affect a lot of people, and these things are on record. So people know about them. And it turns out that Mr. Bloomberg has got himself into some trouble for talking about stop and frisk, and basically his quote is talking about how he knows exactly where all the crime is in parts of New York. It's in minority communities. It's the young black kids. They're the ones who are causing all of the danger, who are causing all of the crime. So I will play a bit of this. The audio is not very good, but we do have the original tape. And this is the thing is, you don't need a leaked tape. I mean, he talked about this and boasted about it for years.
For a long time. He only recently recanted.
Yeah. So let's play a small clip of this.
Yeah.
To Bloomberg tape. Tell me if you can hear it too.
95% of your murders and murderers and murder victims fit one MO. You can just take the description, Xerox it, and pass it out to all the cops.
Oof. So he said you can just take their description, Xerox it, and pass it on to the cops.
They are male minorities, 15 to 25.
They're all minorities.
That's true in New York, it's true in virtually every city. And that's where the real crime is. You've got to get the guns out of the hands of the people that get killed. So you've got to, if you want to spend the money, put a lot of cops in the street, put those cops where the crime is, which means in minority neighborhoods. So it's one of the unintended consequences is people say, oh my God, you are arresting kids for marijuana that are all minorities. Yes, that's true. Why? Because we put all the cops in the minority neighborhoods. Yes, that's true. Why do we do it? Because that's where all the crime is.
Oh, why do you do that?
Yeah.
All the crime is.
Yeah, not good for someone seeking the Democratic nomination for president.
No. I mean, did he think he would just be able to skip the part where he, you know, has to face the purity test?
Well, yeah. And I mean, not to mention, it's important to explain exactly why stop and frisk is so problematic. So the justice system and your interactions with the police officer are supposed to be prefaced with just cause, meaning that an officer has just cause to, let's say, stop you. So just cause would be speeding, or they could do a breathalyzer if they smell alcohol in your breath or you're visibly intoxicated or something like that. Stop and frisk completely erodes any presumption of innocence, and it just allows for law enforcement to point you out and say, hey, stop, we get to search your person, even though we've identified no reason to justify the search. So it's inherently anti-American if you believe in any of those core kind of principles of justice. Sure. And then you overlay that with the fact that he's basically saying, well, let's just hire more cops and send them all into black neighborhoods. Yeah. That's pretty bad.
It did go before the courts a number of times. There were times where it was struck down and sometimes it was supported. But there really wasn't much outrage or outcry at the time. It came a bit later, you know, as sort of the more progressive circle started gaining a bit of steam and political mm-hmm. power. But, you know, this was kind of the mantra. There, people were all excited about this. I know that civil libertarians have been talking about it for a long time, you know, for two reasons. One is a lot of people had cannabis on them and then were sent to jail for any of these mm-hmm. marijuana possession charges. Sometimes they did have weapons, but other times it was, you know, they got put in jail because they lied to the police about their name or were reluctant to talk to them because you don't know your rights most of the time.
Yep.
If you're an average person walking down the street and a cop comes up to you and starts asking you all kinds of questions, you don't know your rights, which is unfortunate.
Yep.
We need to do a lot more education on that. But yeah, the question always should be, am I free to go?
Yeah, am I being detained?
Do you have a warrant?
Yes, exactly. And if the answer is no, then that should end the conversation in a perfect role. Unfortunately, in Bloomberg's world of the all-knowing police officer, that is not the case. You do not have those rights, which obviously when we're talking about who could be president and the implications that could have for criminal justice reform and some of the positive developments of the Trump administration on criminal justice reform. I think it's on that subject safe to say that Bloomberg could be a giant leap backwards on some of these big victories.
He's got a lot of skeletons in his closet. You know, this is a billionaire. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I like Bloomberg. A lot of people read Bloomberg as a news website, a news outlet. They do a lot of market analysis. That's all wonderful and great. And all goes to the entrepreneur. But this is also a mayor who banned Big Gulps.
Yeah.
All right.
So he's not just a mayor who banned Big Gulps. There is a long list of absolutely insane regulations that...
Oh, the Bloomberg nanny state. Yeah, it's atrocious. And he's also, as we mentioned on one of the last episodes, he is the one who is one of the primary funders of all the garbage sort of outrage over e-cigarettes and vaping.
Yep.
Himself is giving like hundreds of millions of dollars to spread mistruths through things like the Truth Initiative. But there's also another thing that might be a skeleton in the closet for Bloomberg. Listen to this.
Donald Trump.
Oh, let me jump the gun there.
You say that you're a big fan of Donald Trump.
I friend of Donald Trump's. He's a New York icon.
You've actually been quoted saying you're a big
Big fan. This is a couple years ago. But that's not going to help. That's going to be on repeat. That's going to be in a, I don't know if it'll be in a Klobuchar ad. Maybe it'll be in a,
it could be in a Bernie ad. Yeah. I could see Bernie doing that.
Bernie never makes it much about Trump, but yeah, he could probably use that.
Yeah. And it's funny because if you go on Twitter, Michael Bloomberg and Trump are basically feuding with each other, going back and forth about who's going to beat who and who has the resources to beat who. And of course, Trump has already nicknamed Michael Bloomberg. And I think you know his nickname. What?
Yes, sir.
What was the nickname that he gave him, Yael?
Mini Mike.
So you had low energy Jeb, you had crooked Hillary, you had Lion Ted Cruz. Now we have Mini Mike.
And there's another story around Bloomberg and what's happening. And this is going to affect a lot of you Zoomers out there. You know, you Zoomers who are listening to talk radio or Zoomers who are listening to this on the podcast later. Turns out that Michael Bloomberg's meme army are out in force. There's a lot of stories about people who are using Instagram and things like Snapchat to chase followers and supporters and influencers, getting them to post pictures of Michael Bloomberg. It's kind of fascinating. This is a different type of approach. I mean, this is actually a 2020 style of campaign. And there was one question he was asked recently. It might have been at a press conference, but in North Carolina, so Michael Bloomberg came to our dear Old North State just recently. He was in the Raleigh area, came to Charlotte, and he had already gotten some pretty high-level endorsements, some state legislators. And one of the journalists asked him, "Is like, hey, do you pay these guys?" I have a small clip that we could
play. Your campaign ever given any type of financial incentive for an endorsement?
Yeah, of course not, but we have supported elected officials around this country for a long time. I've been doing it for years. I want better government. They need money to run, and I'm pleased to do that. I, if you remember, paid for some ads that flipped the House, 21 seats. People were good on guns and good on the environment, and that gave Nancy Pelosi a majority, and that let her take over and start the impeachment process and do what the Constitution says Congress should do, and that is provide some oversight to the executive branch. And
it's a strange world out there.
Wow. Yeah, so...
Yeah, it's I mean, it's...
It's getting out there. It's out in the meme world, David.
Yeah, and it's... I think the I don't know if it was a leak or whatever it was, but people are getting paid upwards of $150 to post stuff that makes Michael Bloomberg look cool.
That's it.
Well, I think it's proposed.
Okay, that's not bad.
Yeah, that's pretty good. I mean, that's quite the arrangement until you realize what's actually happening, and then all of a sudden you wonder why that person you went to high school with is all of a sudden a Michael Bloomberg fan.
There's one the one that came out is this Instagram page F Jerry. Obviously, I'm not saying because we're on the radio.
Yeah.
F. Jerry, they have a screenshot of the Michael Bloomberg Instagram. I'm going to pull this up. I need to look at this. F. Jerry Bloomberg.
It's hilarious.
Way to go. All right. So F. Jerry, this is like an influencer account. So there's a screenshot. It's like, "Hello, Jerry. My granddaughter showed me this account. Your memes are very humorous. Can you post a meme that lets everyone know I'm the cool candidate?" And F. Jerry responds, "What did you have in mind?" And it's just a picture of Bloomberg like wearing shorts and like a Patagonia jacket.
He's wearing like the traditional Chad and Brad outfit, but for like a 75-year-old.
Oh, that's good. That's good. Yeah, just dropped off, just walked off the golf course, you know?
Yeah.
I hit up the golf course bar. And then F. Jerry responds, oof, that will cost like $1 billion. Michael Bloomberg response, what's your Venmo? Now, this is the ad, right? This is the genius of it. This is actually the ad. So all they do is take a screenshot and put it on there. I'm sure they're getting a couple thousand.
Oh, I'm sure they are. I'm sure they are. It's hilarious. And it's funny when it's so blatant that like it becomes its own joke. Whether or not it actually serves to build his brand, I don't know.
I think there is a lot of – look, this is exactly what I would have done if I was a Zoomer. I would be attracted to this because this is the meme world that I think you and I, David, we understand it. But I think we only understand maybe 50% because there is so much more that is happening with the underbelly of the internet, especially among younger people. I'm talking people who are like 16 to 22. They just live in a different world. You know, they view Facebook as like a place for losers, for old people, for boomers, right? These are the people on Snapchat.
Are we old now?
Oh, yeah.
Are we old now? Some of these things, it's like, oh, yeah, TikTok. Okay. All right. I feel like my grandpa when he was like, hey, should I get a Facebook page?
I just want to put up there. You know what I think of the Mexicans? No, grandfather, please. I think the Bloomberg campaign is super smart because they're reaching out to all these Zoomers or like these meme people and agencies. And I don't know. They also did there was a couple of tweets during the debate. I don't think it was the New Hampshire debate. It was the one before it. Well, it was just like pictures of Michael Bloomberg, like in a cookie or in an Oreo. Did you see this?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, his meme game has certainly picked up. I mean, in his feud with Donald Trump, he tweeted a GIF from the movie Gladiator, and it's Russell Crowe saying, "The time for honoring yourself will soon be at an end," which is the scene where Russell Crowe kind of meets Joaquin Phoenix in the Coliseum. So whoever is on his social media team is certainly with it in terms of like well-placed funny GIFs and memes and being hip, as the kids would say.
So he's got the money to do it. I mean, we talked about last show. He's got, you know, if you join the staff, you're getting a brand new iPhone, brand new MacBook Air.
Oh, yeah.
You probably get a pretty good expense account. So you can go to Whole Foods every day, get your lunch. That's all paid for.
Yep.
It's pretty crazy. So I don't know. I mean, this says nothing about his policies, says nothing about, you know, what he plans to do to defeat Trump. It has everything to do kind of with his organizing power. Right now, he's kind of going through the hand-wringing of the kind of purists on the progressive side of the Democratic Party. So we'll see what happens if he comes out unscathed or not. Who knows? But
and he's also approached this in a really different way where it seems like his primary focus endorsement wise is mayors. So he's gone out and actively kind of sought out the endorsement of some fairly well-known mayors, whether it be the mayor of Washington, D.C. or Houston, Texas. And what's interesting is over the last, I would say, 48 hours, all of the campaign donations that Michael Bloomberg has historically made to those folks have come out. And we're talking millions and millions of dollars. And then all of a sudden, all of these mayors are now endorsing Michael Bloomberg. So it'll be interesting to see how that develops, whether people will really feel like these endorsements are genuine, whether or not they'll get dismissed. It's certainly interesting whether or not he can actually buy his way into the mix to the point where he's actually a contender. He certainly isn't there yet. But I think he could be there. He could be there in a matter of a few weeks.
Yeah. And for a lot of people who are, again, more progressive in the Democrat Party, Bloomberg represents some positive things. They like that he wants to ban guns or go after guns. They like that, I guess, that he wants to crack down on vaping. But really, they kind of detest the method, right? It's like, we like the ideas, but the way that he's doing it is exactly what we've been railing against for the past several years. Billionaire guy coming in, splashing money all over the place, buying people off. I mean, who cares what mayors... I mean, when was the last time we cared what a mayor thought or who they endorsed for president?
I mean, it just seems like such a... It's a weird strategy because... local city governments in the United States are so divorced from federal policy. I mean, obviously there are instances where they overlap, but it's not like governors endorsing a president that, that really kind of carries, or a candidate, which would really carry weight because the relationship between the federal government and each particular state is that much more important. So it's, yeah, it's certainly an interesting approach. Whether or not it actually bears any fruit, I don't know. Like, are people in Houston being swayed by the fact that their mayor supports Bloomberg for president? I don't know. You know, I'm not sure.
Really like that mayor.
Yeah.
So it goes. Well, David, let's. We had some big news stuff that happened over last week, or I guess this week.
Yep. I'm
talking about. We had New Hampshire.
And then yes.
Along the way, we lost some good candidates.
We did.
We had.
We lost a few good men out there.
Two candidates drop out. One was tech entrepreneur and the self-appointed head of the Yang Gang, Mr. Andrew Yang. And the next is former Massachusetts Governor Deval Patrick. We do rest our hands on the ground as these men bow out and their chances of becoming president dissipate into the wind.
I think the big thing for me was, I mean, we've talked about the Democratic candidates. I think the thing that was the most attractive about Andrew Yang was that even if you disagreed with him, he seemed like a really genuine dude. He didn't have that like politician stain on him where like you knew he was going to flip on something, or he had a long track record of doing X and now he thinks Y. And I think that part of the reason why there was so much excitement, and he really came out of nowhere. Why there was so much excitement is because he had that kind of genuine quality to him. So it's definitely a shame to see him drop out. He was a bit of a voice of reason on a variety of things. I particularly liked when he essentially refused to talk about Trump. And he explicitly stated, guys, like, the conditions that got Donald Trump elected are the problem. We need to focus on what it was that got people in Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, Michigan, and Florida to vote for Donald Trump. Let's talk about that rather than always just talking about how awful Donald Trump is and trying to beat that drum as if that's a election strategy. So hopefully whoever, I mean, for the Democrats' sake, hopefully whoever does win can borrow from his playbook in terms of rhetoric and approach, because I think that resonated with a lot of people. It resonated with a lot of people who weren't necessarily Democrats and people who are independents as well. So tough to see him drop out.
There are some rumors, some vice presidential pick rumors.
Interesting. Who would he be a good VP for? Who do you think?
Well, ideally Bernie. And then Bernie's done, and Bernie is too tired after about a year, and then lets Yang run the show.
Interesting. So that's the Yang Gang rumor on Reddit now, eh?
That's what the Redditors are saying. You're listening to Consumer Choice Radio on the Big Talker FM 106.7 here in the morning, and also out on your podcast and everywhere else, consumerchoiceradio.com. But yeah, we can't deny the winner coming out of New Hampshire.
Nope.
Look at that. We're 29 minutes in, and we've denied the winner. was Bernie Sanders. Bernie Sanders.
It was. On top.
And he's now using the line that he won the popular vote in Iowa, and he won the primary in New Hampshire. So I just want to let you
know. Yes.
But here's a interesting clip. This is Bernie, who is invited on, I think this is the PBS NewsHour, very well-respected news program. And we're starting to see that a lot of the traditional sort of Democratic groups are starting to push back against Bernie because of his health care plan specifically. Let's listen.
Yep.
Let me ask you about some of your agenda. In Nevada, powerful culinary workers union, they announced today they're not going to endorse a candidate. It wasn't so many days ago that they put out a flyer saying that they oppose the kind of single-payer health plan that you have endorsed. How do you respond to their position?
Look, they are a great union, and I know their leadership, and we work and will work very closely with them.
By the way, this is the future of American politics if Bernie wins.
Yeah.
It's only going to be like large unions that are like running the show. So just a warning, everybody.
Some of their part of Unite here, the broader union, and some of the locals in Unite here are strongly supporting us, who have the same health care plan as the culinary workers. And those unions believe in Medicare for all. Many unions do believe in Medicare for all.
They're saying your plan would take away the health care that their members have.
Well, I don't quite agree. I think our plan for them and for every person in America would expand the health care that we have.
Right.
We're going to expand Medicare to include...
It would literally take away their private plans. I think he's like, you can't... He has to be able to communicate... Well, I think he's wrong, but he needs to be able to communicate his viewpoint that, yes, we're going to take away your plan and then pivot to, but what we're going to give you is better. Now, I don't think that's even remotely true, but his failure to answer this is really, I think, really be really problematic in a general election, because all of a sudden you have unions who have negotiated for what is very often great private medical coverage, often covered by their employer, and then all of a sudden that hard-earned battle is lost because Bernie Sanders has criminalized those insurance plans, and it disappears in an instance. And you have to it takes a lot to convince those negotiators and those union reps that what Bernie Sanders offers them, which is basically complete government control over the healthcare sector, is better than what they've negotiated. And I think a lot of people know that the answer to that is no. Even if you're in favor of universal healthcare, they know that the answer of single payer is not going to be superior to what they've already negotiated. And so you have this fracturing of the left, which is certainly going to get interesting as the non-Bernie Sanders candidates drop out, and I think we'll get closer to a 1-1 or 2-1 race. And I think this will be a huge sticking point in terms of where the Dems go.
It's a strange world out there.
Yeah, definitely.
And on the health side of things, I think one thing that's really interesting as well, and I want your take on this, Yael, to see if it's something that would matter to you as a U.S. voter. So Bernie has said that he will not release his post-heart attack medical records. Traditionally, that's been something for older candidates. I remember John McCain doing it. For older candidates, it has been something that's been important. Even Trump has done it, although I think he fudged the numbers a little bit to downplay his weight. But yeah, what do you think? Do you think that candidates of that particular age should let American voters know that they're healthy, especially given that he's had a heart attack on the campaign trail?
I don't know. I'm probably an outlier here. I don't necessarily think, because first off, if he releases medical records, like, what is, nobody can read that. Like, it's all chicken scratch, and it's, you know, who knows? It's like, oh, well, he had this test, and then he had an aneurotic, you know, whatever surgery. Like, no one's going to know what that means. The journalist will obviously interpret it, and then it'll be spun a million different ways. So actually, it's probably good for him to not do it, because it would, you know, instead of just being one story about his health, it would spin out into 80 different things. If like, oh, you know, well, he's actually got a stent, or he's got this experimental thing. What happens if it just explodes and he dies on stage? But especially because he's old, you know, with the health, who cares? I sincerely don't think it's super important. Because, you know, we don't live in a dictatorship where it's like the health of the leader is, you know, that's how we'll live our lives.
Yeah. I kind of agree with you.
He can alleviate that if he picks a younger VP, and I think then it's over.
That's a good point. But yeah, I think the problem is that so many on the Democratic side demanded that of, if you go back to John McCain, I just remember this clip of Matt Damon being like, how can we vote for this guy? He's so old. He's like a heartbeat. He's like a skipped heartbeat away from Sarah Palin being the president.
He's a heartbeat away from the presidency. It was always
the
line.
And that was a real news story. That stuck. That was a huge sticking point for some voters on McCain, is that he was just so old. He had a history of various ailments, illnesses.
I think you are projecting well into the future, though, because if Bernie comes out after Super Tuesday on top, this will be like the number one story. Because I don't think the policies don't scare many American people very much, you know, because they've been promised and lied to, and they've heard everything about from politicians. So whenever you say, oh, he's going to do national rent control, most people hear that and think, okay, great, my rent's going down. It's not true.
No.
And I hope, you know, we can talk more about that. And there's so much research that gives us the opposite. But that's not going to scare people. But if maybe if you talk up the death game, I mean, we saw that with Hillary Clinton. One video comes out where she's collapsing into a van. Everyone assumes she's, you know, about to die. So that was a big deal during the last election. So it could be. As Bernie himself has said, there's
it's a strange world out there.
It is a strange world. I don't think you could have found a clip that could be inserted more into an ordinary conversation.
Yeah, I do want to play the rest of the clip that he had. There were some parts because he was talking about obviously the kind of inner union politics, but he does mention a couple.
America
of things.
Would expand the health care that we have. We're going to expand Medicare to include home health care, dental care, hearing aids, eyeglasses. We're going to do away with premiums and copayments and deductibles and out-of-pocket expenses. We're going to take on the greed and corruption of the pharmaceutical industry and make sure that nobody in America has to spend more than $200 a year for prescription drugs.
$200 a year for prescription drugs max, David. Whoa.
I spend more than $200 a year on Uber Eats.
Look, Judy, at the end of the day, we are spending twice as much per capita as do the people of any other major nation. And yet, despite that huge expenditure, 87 million Americans are uninsured or underinsured, 30,000 die, 500,000 go bankrupt. That doesn't make sense.
But they are opposing your position. Some of your supporters in Nevada attacked the union after this.
Well, you know, it's a funny thing. Obviously, that is not acceptable to me. And I don't know who these so-called supporters are. You know, we're living in a strange world on the internet. And sometimes people attack people in somebody else's name. But let me be very clear. Anybody making personal attacks against anybody else in my name is not part of our movement. We don't want them. And I'm not so sure, to be honest with you, that they are necessarily part of our movement. You understand, you know, the nature of the internet. It's a strange world out there.
Wow. He's kind of throwing the conspiracy thing out there a little bit.
Yeah, a little bit.
He just needed to say, like, you know, these are a couple of comrades, you know, could be. The problem is that he likes Russia. I mean, that's where he honeymooned. So.
Yeah, which is so weird. I mean, that is so weird when you think of someone in the heart of the Cold War honeymooning in Russia and the Soviet Union.
Like the middle of Wuhan, you know, we've got the flu. It's like, you know what? Let's go celebrate our honeymoon in Wuhan.
Yeah. Ugh. So strange. On another note, so we talked about Bernie winning. We talked about Yang and Patrick dropping out. I think the real loser, we haven't talked about the real loser so far, and that is Joe Biden.
Don't pick on him, please.
What an absolute nightmare. You have this decorated, longtime senator. He has this heroic story after the tragic death of his wife. He is like the guy who rolls up his sleeve and fights for working class voters. He becomes vice president in what is arguably the most notable Democratic presidency since JFK, and I would probably say including JFK. And his whole political legacy and record will come down to losing to Bernie Sanders in Iowa and New Hampshire. It's,
yeah, I think it was a quote from an Obama official at the time who, I think it was right after Obama left. So it was during the Trump thing, and you know, Joe Biden was thinking about maybe running, and they're like, they told him, it's like, Joe, do you really want, after all these years of your historic career in the Senate, and do you really want all of it to come down to you sitting in a hotel room on TV seeing Bernie Sanders win the primary in Iowa?
Yeah.
The caucuses in
Iowa. I mean, he didn't even get any delegates in New Hampshire, both him and Warren got zero.
And this is just another example of, you know, this was the media propping him up. And it was a lot of the sort of party leaders, or, God, how do you say it? Just the elites of the party, of the Democratic Party, and a lot of the people in the media who were just like, you know, that looks fine. You know, let's see if we can serve this up, if voters will like a taste. Well, they rejected that. They threw that. That's one star.
Yeah.
The one star heel right there, the joke.
Yeah. They opened that up in the mail and got returned to sender, sent that right back.
Yeah, that was bad. So that's, yeah, maybe Joe Biden dissipates from here. Who knows? But a lot of things out of New Hampshire. Pete Buttigieg coming out on top as well. And we have Amy Klobuchar
doing well
on the mix. So,
yep. I think what's nice there is you have if Biden were to drop, you would start to see the moderate versus progressive race really take form, which is, I think, the conversation that the Dems need to have with themselves. It's what the Republicans didn't do in the last primary for them. It didn't become a conversation of the establishment versus populism and Trump. It was like eight establishment candidates versus the populist and Trump squeaked his way through. If you have this wide race still, where you have multiple moderates and then Bernie and Warren, my concern is that that's how Bernie gets through. If it narrows down and you have the conversation of the moderates versus Bernie Sanders, well, I mean, the moderates right now, if you pool them together, is something like 55-58% of primary voters. So you could see an anti-Bernie push to try and prevent him from winning the nomination.
Yeah, I think you know, there's so much more to see, and we'll be there to cover it. You're listening to Consumer Choice Radio on the Big Talker FM, 106.7 FM, consumerchoiceradio.com. I've got some clips of our president here in the United States, David, that I have to play, but first off, I got a message for you.
They're winners. The team is a winner. And NASCAR is a winner.
That's right, NASCAR. We've got this weekend the Daytona 500. Those of you listening in North Carolina on the radio are as excited as I am. It's going to be huge, but not just because it's the first points race of the year, not just because it starts off the great NASCAR season, but because there's going to be a man who's going to be showing up there at the race. That's right. We're looking at Mr. Donald J. Trump, President of the United States, will be at the Daytona 500.
Yeah, so I think you'll have to educate me on the significance of this, because obviously I'm not the biggest NASCAR fan, but I do know the relevance of the Daytona 500. So what does it mean for the president to be there? Like, why is that significant?
So there were basically the last time a president came to a NASCAR race, it was actually at the Daytona 500 as well. And it was George W. Bush, and he came in 2014 in his second reelection. So he went there, and huge crowd. I mean, this is, you know, right as the Iraq War is just, like, getting crazy. We're sending all these troops all over the world, big time. But he was able to go to the NASCAR race there in Daytona. There was just huge crowds, big excitement. I mean, this race is sold out. It's the biggest race of the year. It is the Super Bowl of racing. And to have a president there, you know, if you've ever been to a NASCAR race or you haven't been, you should know that it is a very, very patriotic affair. Every single big race, you have the big military jets that fly overhead as soon as the Star Spangled Banner is played. NASCAR, whenever the NFL controversy with kneeling and all that stuff with Colin Kaepernick was going on, you know, people made a point of always pointing out in NASCAR, you always have the Star Spangled Banner. Everybody's got their hand on their heart. You've always got a prayer. You know, it's a very patriotic sport. But my prediction is that with Trump being at Daytona, I mean, this is going to be insane. It'll be a bonanza. First off, the TV ratings will be through the roof.
Yeah.
Because he'll probably freewheel. They'll give him the mic at some point. He'll do something. Sponsors will love it. I mean, they spend a good amount of money on the cars and the commercials, and the fans will go insane. I mean, it doesn't take much imagination to think that the NASCAR fan base tends to lean more conservative.
Of course, yeah.
More rural crowd. You know, they like racing, this kind of thing. And obviously, I'm very biased. I love racing as well.
But
my thought was just imagine Marine One, the president's helicopter, swoops into the finish line, lands. There's a presidential podium there. It's got a checkered flag attached. And he has, like, his version of a rally right there on the front stretch. It would be insane. I think it would be very good for the sport. It would be great for Trump. He'd probably get a lot of hate on many TV shows and newspapers. But look, he's reaching out to the people. And if this is where you're going to reach the people, I think it's a very, very good start. So Daytona 500 this weekend. That's on Sunday. Tomorrow, actually. I think that coverage starts around 2 or something. Not a commercial, but you should know that it's going to be crazy to see that Trump is going to be there. It was announced, I think, in an advisory to the local airport. So they let pilots know that a VIP was going to be in an area, and the message would come from the White House. So,
and does that usually, like, shut down the airport when the president shows up?
No, because actually the last time when Bush came, the race was getting underway, or they had just sort of finished the driver introductions, and you could see Air Force One landing in the background.
Okay.
And then they helicopter him over. It's just insane. It's going to be big. It is a large television event. These are definitely people in many of what others consider the flyover states. It's going to be a big rally. So we'll see what happens. I'm going to be very interested in going on there. But David, you had a couple other stories here. One I wanted to highlight. As I mentioned early on, this show is produced by the Consumer Choice Center. And as we are a very active consumer advocacy group, we've got plenty of media hits that ourselves and our colleagues have been publishing all around the world. Just to go through the list, and this is over at consumerchoicecenter.org, we've got some very good articles on pesticides that have been written by our friend and colleague, Mr. Bill Wietz, that was in some of the Belgian and French newspapers. We've got a lot about locust plagues and pesticides. Yep. This is actually very huge in the eastern part of Africa. David, you've been quoted in a few things and talking about digital identity verification. There's one that I put together, a paper on the myth of the vaping crisis and a new war on flavored nicotine products. And then you've got one article here in the National Post, Canada's national newspaper, on cannabis. What's that about?
I do. So for those who are not aware, cannabis beverages and edibles have just become legal. They weren't legal right off the start in terms of legalization. And the province of Ontario, which is Canada's largest province, which includes Toronto, is basically wondering, okay, well, now that these things are legal, should you be able to buy them at a restaurant or at a concert? And so in my op-ed, I argue that you should, in fact, be able to buy a cannabis beverage or an edible or some variation of the two at a bar or a restaurant or a concert venue. And arguing in favor of what I call commercial consumption. And the reason why that's important, I mean, for the most part, in a major North American city, you don't see rampant consumption on the streets, even in places where it's legal, with maybe the exception of Vegas. Even in places where it's technically legal to have open alcohol, you don't necessarily see it rampant through the streets. And that's mostly because people can buy alcohol at restaurants and bars and clubs and things like that. And so I make the argument that the province of Ontario should legalize commercial consumption and allow for some of these products to be available in commercial settings so that consumers can have more choice.
Definitely. And there are some great recommendations that you've made, David. And I think you have been invited to try to participate in some of the government inquiries. So we'll get some more updates from you on that. And some positive news as well on the cannabis front. We're very unapologetic. We're in favor of smart cannabis policy. So some sort of decriminalization and actually bringing it out of the black market would be amazing. It'd be great, not just for our economy, but it would free up our entire criminal justice system. Police could actually focus on real crimes that harm people.
Yep.
And this would be a huge economic boon, as we're seeing in Canada. So we have some good news from Los Angeles on cannabis.
A major change today for tens of thousands of people with marijuana convictions in L.A. County. The L.A. County District Attorney, Jackie Lacey, who is up for re-election, announced a move today to dismiss over 60,000 pot convictions dating as far back as the 1960s.
When you think about the number of people who are in the marijuana business legally now, and think about all the folks who sold way back in the day, and they're burdened with a felony conviction. So this is a way of providing some justice to our society.
Lacey says two-thirds of the convictions being dismissed involved people of color. She says she also asked the court to seal those records so it's easier for people who had convictions to get jobs and housing.
I think this is a great move. I think this is something that's often ignored when we talk about legalization. So it's one thing to legalize it, but when you expunge records, I think you appropriately identify that the number one reason for legalization is that it never should have been illegal. And if it never should have been illegal, these people do not deserve to be plagued with a record for violating a law that was ridiculous to begin with. And so I think this is a big step forward. That's a huge plus.
Yeah, and they still need to figure out exactly how they're going to do it technically, you know, because you can't just run, you know, a scripting program or some code. A lot of this stuff is still on paper, so some things you just need to be able to put under lock and key. So it'd be interesting to see how they do it, because then that system can be applied to what they're trying to do in Chicago, much the same. Hopefully, they've already started to do this a lot in Colorado. So that's happening a lot more. I know in Canada it's been pretty slow, as far as I know. Is that right? For expunging,
it has been slow, and people who have advocated for it have really pushed the government to be much quicker. I would argue that there has to be some sort of, like you said, code or scenario where it's done by default. I don't like the idea of having to. Some people suggest, well, why don't you just have everybody apply? Usually, that requires a fee. And that seems incredibly unfair to make people get a pardon or have their record expunged for something that should have never been illegal. So creating some sort of automatic process where all of those convictions are basically just wiped from the roll would be the ideal path forward.
So we've got much more on cannabis. We've talked about the cannabis conclave some weeks ago as well. You can go back and listen to that episode, "The Rebels of Davos." You can find that on all the players on Consumer Choice Radio. You're listening here on the Big Talker, 106.7 FM. One last story I wanted to get to, David. I think it's important for a lot of the stuff that we're doing. Certainly for the media sphere. This is an article that you put in there, and here's a small clip. This is about McClatchy Newspapers, a huge newspaper group in the United States, the second largest. Many large papers, specifically in North Carolina, including the Charlotte Observer and the News and Observer, are owned by this company, and turns out they are filing for bankruptcy.
Well, now to a major business headline with local and national implications. The owner of the Sacramento Bee has filed for bankruptcy. McClatchy is the second biggest newspaper company in the nation. The company says all 30 of its local newsrooms will operate as usual for now. Now, McClatchy started back in 1857 with a newspaper in Sacramento. That paper later became the Sacramento Bee.
All right, we don't have to get into history, but this is crazy. Huge newspaper group. These are large newspapers all around the country, many of which that we've been published in or written for, and now kind of going down the tubes. And there's a lot to go on, but this is all about the changing, you know, media sphere, advertising, the internet. Everything is kind of changing in this new day and age.
It's concerning. There's two parts of it. One part is it's one part disruption, because people consume media in different ways now than in the past. And so that eats obviously into revenues for these traditional newspapers. They have to figure out a way to adapt. They have to figure out a way to not become Blockbuster and just be completely swallowed up by new disruptive technologies. And so the onus is really on them to figure out, okay, what do we do? How do we integrate multimedia and the online world more into this space? They have to kind of have that dynamic viewpoint. Some of them obviously won't and will fail. But then there's also the kind of more sobering aspect of this, which is the role the press is supposed to play in a free society. And obviously the blow to that, that is represented if this bankruptcy really goes sour and all of a sudden you lose a lot of these papers that people rely on for information.
I think there's one, and you know, my experience is that I've worked in local newspapers and at the Gaston Gazette in Gastonia, North Carolina, and it is true that these papers have been struggling for a long time. It's not that they just all of a sudden, you know, everybody moved off. It really has been about advertising and revenue. And you have an entirely new spectrum of new media. You have YouTube, you have podcasts, you have online websites. I mean, you have so many online websites now that have like full-time White House reporters and Pentagon reporters and, you know, people who are now have massive reach. I mean, if you do one episode of the Joe Rogan podcast, you have a bigger audience than most large metro newspapers in this country. That's crazy.
I think the stats on the Joe Rogan show is at any given time, an episode of his podcast, which is breaks all of the norms because it's like a 3-hour unscripted conversation with somebody, has more viewers than any particular CNN program.
Yeah. And that speaks to impact, you know, it speaks to impact. And, you know, we do need investigative journalism. We do need a lot of scrutiny because, look, you know, your liberty is not just taken away by people who are in the federal government or at the top levels. Most of it is happening at the local level, at the city council, the county commissioner, certainly at the state house. There are a lot of taxes being passed, a lot of zoning restrictions and laws that are passed as well. There's so much there that is actually impacting your liberty and your freedom. And, you know, that's why we want to be able to discuss that. We want to be able to have that information. So I do hope that we can continue to fill the vacuum. We can have competition, good media organizations and companies. There is a lot of research out there. There is a lot of investigative journalism. Much of it now is online. I mean, I spend a good amount of time on YouTube every day because there's a lot of great people on there who are doing good work. We do need a lot more locally, though. So support your alternative papers. Support your papers if you want, if you think they're doing a good job. Hey, look, if they're doing a terrible job, then maybe they shouldn't be in business. We certainly don't want to be in a situation like in Canada where we start bailing out the newspapers. Am I right, David?
No, don't do that, because that also blurs the lines between what is supposed to be a free and independent press. And so when they rely on government intervention, that makes things very uncomfortable. So do not do that.
Yeah, it's a message that we take from the Great White North and hope to implement in the U.S. Just a word of warning. So you've been listening to Consumer Choice Radio here on the Big Talker FM 106.7. Please go to consumerchoiceradio.com. You can subscribe to our podcast after the fact. And we'll be back with you next week with more topics. And we've got some great interviews lined up. We'll be reporting from a couple of different places here over the next few weeks. It's been a lot of fun. David, thanks so much for being on the mic.
Another great episode. Until next week.
Bye-bye.